John Herron for AM 1290.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duver and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11 and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets. And at Montecito's Upper Village. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Well, thanks for being here today, Neil. You have family in town visiting.
It's good to be anywhere.
But you have a sweet new grandbaby.
I have a new grandbaby who's 10 months old who is listening today. And I said, it's never too early to learn about how to maximize your investments.
Like a good grandfather.
Like a good grandfather.
And we have in studio with us today the president and CEO of American Riviera Bank, Jeff Devine. Thanks so much for being here.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the show. Really appreciate it.
So the first article we have today is entitled, "We Went to a Steak Dinner Annuity Pitch. The Salesman Wasn't Pleased." And this is in the New York Times this weekend. And of all people, Ron Lieber, who writes their Money Matters column, his grandmother got an invitation to get a free steak gourmet meal if she attended a lecture about annuities. And the invitation permitted her to invite one other person. So Ron Lieber from the New York Times decided to go along. And he looked up the lecturer, Arif Halaby, and he discovered that there were several state cease and refrain orders because of selling financial products that were for unqualified securities. And he goes very skeptically into this meeting, and he finds that when he walked in, there's this huge picture of Halaby in a police officer's uniform because he used to be a police officer, and statistics about these annuities. And the annuity chart that was up on the front of the room said an equity indexed annuity performs 8.29% better after an 18-year period between 1998 and 2016 than an S&P 500 stock market index. And in very fine print at the bottom of the chart was a statement saying, and he couldn't even read it, he had to go right next to it, it said, "This did not take into account reinvestment of dividends." So when he finished the lunch, he went back and calculated, this is the author, the index had it included reinvestment of dividends, and found out that if you included the performance of the S&P outperforms the annuity by 33.72%. So here we have a very highly commissioned, illiquid investment that performs much worse than the an index fund or anything, basically, that is being sold to senior citizens.
It really is just it's so hard to imagine how that salesperson can even look in the mirror every day. It's one of those things where targeting the senior market who are easily confused by these things and don't fully understand, and then having such misleading statements such as indexed annuity does better than the S&P 500, on the fees alone you'd be eaten alive. Mm. You know, he deserves to have cease and desist orders against him.
And the end of the article, Lieber points out that the steak was not cooked to his specifications. So
besides that, it wasn't even a good steak dinner.
It wasn't even good. The next article from the Wall Street Journal is entitled "The Danger of Too Much Optimism." And the first sentence is, "Optimism is a healthy trait for investors, but believing in the impossible is a sure route to losing money." And the article talks about a consensus of investment companies expect the S&P 500 will grow 13.3% for the next 3 to 5 years. Well, to put it in context, the article says that earnings for companies in the index have grown an average of about 7% per year for the last 2 decades, while revenue has gone up less, 4%. Therefore, for you to get growth of 13.3% annually, you would have to see profit margins going up a lot, and profit margins today are at record levels. So what he's saying is that the general consensus earnings growth predictions are completely out of whack with reality. And one of the reasons, and this is the why I brought the article, I mean, we all know that sometimes people can get optimistic, is that there's a theory here that since no one can really estimate with any accuracy 5%, 5 year out worth of earnings, there is a sense that when people become optimistic, they tend to be optimistic about their long-term projections because it verifies their general prejudice.
Yeah, it's part of that confirmation bias.
So the next article is entitled Investors Rev Up the Risk in Some Subprime Auto Deals. And we've talked about this before, that there has been an increase in subprime auto loans through the country. But what this article talks about from the Wall Street Journal this Saturday is that single B credit rated auto loans, the lowest tranche of all of the securitized subprime auto loans, have grown dramatically in 2018. More than all prior years combined, according to data from FinCite. And the reason they believe is, number one, right now these loans provide a 6% current return, which is attractive to some people. And they also believe, again, this is sort of questionable, that people won't default on their auto loans because they need their cars to get to work. And this is the same kind of rhetoric that we saw in 2007, 2008 with subprime mortgages. So I don't know if this is an indicator of where we are in terms of risk taking, but it's sort of scary. And this is not the banks this time. This is specialty lenders that are putting together these collateralized deals, and people are buying them.
You know, and it's fortunate that it's not the banks, because that has serious consequences. But it goes back to, I think, a common theme that we talk about here is chase. When it seems too good to be true, it normally is. When you're chasing returns, such as the disaster bonds, such as any of the, or the burrito bonds that we talked about, you know, whenever it seems too good to be true, you need to really understand what that underlying risk is. Who isn't, you know, who's at risk to lose? And it's going to be you if you're holding a subprime tranche of autos.
Or in your pension plan,
right,
for example.
Exactly.
Right?
And it goes to the fact that you have people, if they lose their jobs, they're going to get rid of their car. Or better yet, they're going to take the bus if they can't afford it.
And, you know, speaking of the burrito bond, in case you were not listening 3 weeks ago, the burrito bond was a bond from a Mexican company that said, if you buy our bond, you'll get, for each 100 shares, you get a free burrito. And at least you can eat something.
Out of the UK.
Well, and there's also some discussion about student loans right now. And I've even seen some advertising now for the return of the self-employed, no tax return mortgages. Where's that coming from again?
Oh, gosh.
That's concerning.
Right, absolutely.
Well, the final article we have today, just is consistent with all of this fear we're trying to send out over the airways, with the market up 300 points today, I'm not sure we're dancing to the right tune. But the title of this article in the New York Times was Public Pensions Boost Stake in Risky Property. And what the article is saying is that since so many pension funds still have a huge difference between the required return for the companies or for this towns that they manage, they need to take more risk in order to catch up.
So that they're able to satisfy the outstanding obligations, right. So paying the pensioners their money.
So about 8 years ago, they started buying real estate because real estate as an alternative investment seemed to do better than the stock market. Well, there is no more real estate that they can buy in terms of what they believe they need. So CalPERS, and CalPERS is the largest, and CalSTRS have now been turning to very speculative real estate development deals, which they have no expertise in, which is very, very dangerous. And they're doing it as a way of hopefully making up for the underfunded pension liabilities. But to do that, again, reeks of 2007, 2008.
Well, and the scary thing about that is CalPERS actually makes up 1% of our economy. So when CalPERS is doing something, it's not a small amount of money that they're investing there. It's a large amount of money. And on speculative real estate, just doesn't seem like it's going to work out.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290.
Or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. So if you're just joining us, we have the pleasure of having the president and CEO of American Riviera Bank, Jeff Devine, in studio with us. Jeff, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And as both Neil and I are clients or customers of the bank, we appreciate all that you do. So tell us a little bit. You've been on our show in the past, and tell us a little bit of how you became how American Riviera came to be, because it really is such a great community partner in our community, and it's fun to hear the story.
So the bank actually, the idea came up in 2005. There was a feeling that the community really needed another community bank that was going to be smaller, more responsive, flexible, et cetera. And so the idea came up in 2005. And a group came together, and that group raised $25 million to start the bank. And the bank opened in July of 2006. And $25 million was a fairly large amount of money to start a community bank with back in 2006. There were a lot of banks starting with $8 or $10 million of capital. And it actually turned out to be a great thing for American Riviera Bank, because soon after the bank opened, the economy went through a really big rough spot, as everyone remembers. And having all that capital and having the wherewithal was a fantastic thing as a new bank. And so the bank now has been around for 12 years. And I've been the president and CEO since 2008. So I'm not the original person that started the bank, but I've been here now for over 10 years. And so we've grown from a one-branch bank in Santa Barbara to now a four-branch bank. We have Montecito, Goleta, and we just opened up in San Luis Obispo County in Paso Robles this year.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, so we're
That's
a two-county
exciting.
Bank now, and we're going to be opening up in San Luis Obispo as well. So we'll have five offices by mid-year next year.
Oh, so wow. A community bank can be defined as?
A community bank is generally a bank that is about $10 billion in assets and under. There's different definitions for that, but a community bank is a generally a bank that's going to have its own board of directors that represent the market that the bank is in, and independent from the standpoint of having its own capital, its own shareholders, whether that be one shareholder or whether that be many. In our particular case, it's many shareholders.
Because you're a public company now.
We are traded over the counter on the pink sheets. Mm. Yes.
And so given that you are a public company, how does that change how you do business?
You know, for us, we spend a lot of time doing what's right for the community, what's right for our customers, what's right for the bank. We don't think a lot about whether, oh, we're private or we're public. That doesn't come into the discussion a lot because we don't really focus on, oh, gee, we need to hit these hurdles this quarter or this year because we're a public company and the analysts are going to look at us. Quite frankly, we're a small public company. And so, you know, we don't have a lot of exposure or I guess you could say a lot of analysts that are closely monitoring our quarterly numbers. So we really just attack it as let's do what's right.
And usually that brings you to the best end
That's right.
result for
Absolutely.
Sure. So now, given, let's talk a little bit about how your offering at the bank has expanded. Because originally, when you opened the doors, it was basically you were lending and you were receiving deposits, and that
sure.
was the flow. How have you expanded with you've acquired another
yeah.
community bank?
Well, so that happened in 2016. We merged with the Bank of Santa Barbara. And so American Riviera Bank had already started a mortgage department before that merger. So we had mortgage capabilities in addition to the traditional bank functions that we already had going at American Riviera Bank.
Now, initially, it was really just construction
was real estate lending, construction lending, and small business loans, you know, small to medium-sized business loans.
But it wasn't the traditional mortgage.
It was not the traditional residential mortgage. It was commercial mortgages on commercial buildings. So then we started our own mortgage department in 2012, and then we merged with the Bank of Santa Barbara in 2016, and that brought us a full SBA department, which is the Small Business Administration Program, government guaranteed lending. And so we brought that in 2016. And in terms of product offerings, we've stayed pretty true to being a quote unquote plain vanilla bank in that we exist on the spread income between what we charge on our loans and what we pay out on our deposit accounts. We do not have a whole lot of other lines of business like trust and investment or what would be another example?
Bond trading.
Yeah, we're not traders. So we don't have an insurance company or brokerage inside the bank or anything like that. So we tend to think of ourselves as very much a plain vanilla community bank in terms of our product offering.
So now, given that you've had experience with both really large banks, international banks actually, as well as now with a small community bank, explain to our listeners what the differences are. So why would I choose a international bank as opposed to a small community bank?
Sure. Well, so two main considerations why you would look for a community bank first, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about what's different about the larger banks or their offering. But first of all, I think personal relationships are really important. So when you're with a community bank, you're gonna have a quarterback assigned to your account. You're gonna have someone that you know, either in your branch or a commercial banking officer, that's gonna be your day-to-day contact person with the bank. They're really gonna get to know your business or you personally, such that when you have a need, you already know where to go inside the bank. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect would be that, you know, when you bank with a community bank, you know that your money stays local. So the money that's deposited here gets loaned out here in our community. And it's kind of a nice cycle. We used to have an ad that we ran that kind of showed a sign that almost looked like the recycling sign with the little arrows that went around in a circle. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you deposit here, we loan out in our community, and the community benefits. And so we take a portion of our profits, of course, and we put it back out in terms of, you know, advertising in nonprofit brochures and sponsoring golf tournaments for nonprofits and gala dinners and donations in the community. So
you are a generous contributor, and thank you very much on behalf of the community doing that.
Sure.
Because that is what makes us such a philanthropic community.
And I want to add to your sales pitch about the people in the bank. It's not just the relationship person. If you go into any of the branches, there are maybe four or five people. In my case, maybe because I have a big mouth, all of them know your story.
So I would like to say it's because you're so personable.
That could be it.
Yes.
That's right.
But
and
I don't think it's just me. I think that it's such a small kind of family relationship that you don't have to have your person sitting there. They'll deal with you like they know you, every one of them, which I think is really unique.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely gives it, it doesn't have the traditional bank. It reminds me when I walk into American Riviera of what my parents had when they were, you know, they went in to do their banking. Like everybody knew them, everyone knew all of us, everyone knew what we did wrong last night, you know, the whole nine yards. And that's definitely the feeling that you get, which is really nice given the state of banking today on the big bank side of things.
And on the big bank side, it might be, you know, for larger companies, it might have a lot to do with the availability of credit and the size of the loans that you can get from a bigger bank compared to a community bank. Because we are limited by the amount of capital that we have. So our loans are essentially a portion of our capital. And so the more capital you have, the bigger loans that you can make. And so these large banks can make very large loans. And so that's a consideration for some.
This shows you how old I am. But when I first started on Wall Street, the senior partner said you should open up your account at J.P. Morgan, which at that point had one conveniently located branch worldwide at 15 Broad Street. And I went in and I met with a woman, not because she wanted to see me, because I was at this big firm. And I said, so what is the deal here? And she said, well, we give you the ability, we'll pay your domestics when you're, I was 22, we'll pay your domestics when you're out of town. And I said, well, what about mortgages? She said, our customers don't need to borrow.
Did you open the account, Neil?
Yes, because I was immature, number one.
Oh, you needed to save face.
Number two, I was immature. And number three, the boss said, this is where everybody goes.
Yeah.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Lori Leite from American Riviera Bank. Life is complicated. We can't help you with carpooling the kids to soccer practice or restoring all your files when your laptop crashes. But when it comes to banking, we can make your life much easier. With cutting-edge technology, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks only dream of, we deliver smart banking for smart people. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people. In Santa Barbara at Figaro and Anacapa, and in Montecito's Upper Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County has a special event coming up February 22nd. It's their annual gala taking place at the Hotel Californian. Here's Habitat CEO Jessica Wishan.
It's our annual gala held at the Hotel Californian, a beautiful venue, and Hotel Californian is one of our sponsors. We'll have a cocktail reception and wine, then we'll have a sit-down dinner. It is going to be emceed by Janet Garufas with Montecito Bank and Trust, and we are honoring Leslie Meadowcroft Skipper, who is just a wonderfully generous supporter of ours. It's a very important fundraiser for us February 22nd, and it's on the events tab of our website, www.sbhabitat.org.
To get tickets and sponsorship information, go to sbhabitat.org or contact events at sbhabitat.org. That's events at sbhabitat.org.
Hallelujah! The 38th Annual Messiah Sing-Along. This long-standing holiday tradition is Tuesday, December 18th. Philip McClendon, director, orchestra organized by James Mooy. Four outstanding soloists, and you get to sing Handel's Messiah with a full orchestra. Tickets and music scores available at Chaucer's Bookstore in Loretta Plaza and at the door. It's wonderfully inspiring music, great fun for a great cause, the Unity Shop. Tuesday, December 18th, 7:30, First Presbyterian Church. The 38th Annual Messiah Sing-Along.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we can be reached at 805-564-1290 if you have any questions. So Jeff, let's talk a little bit about the market environment now with the Fed raising interest rates and, you know, the Fed Chair Powell indicating that it seems as if we'll get another raise in December and maybe kind of reevaluate from there, unlike the original path of we will raise until we can't raise anymore. Mm-hmm. Where does that leave the bank, and what do you think that has for an outlook?
Sure. Well, we can talk about that. I think if I'm not mistaken, there's been 8 rate increases of a quarter point that have occurred. Back at the lowest point, the Fed was at around 25 basis points. The Fed increases to date have brought the target rate up to about 3.25%.
Which is still historically very low.
It is. So 3.25%, and then prime rate is typically a couple points above where the Fed funds rate is. And so you see prime rate today at 5.25%. You're right, the Fed is talking about another quarter point this month in December. Most people in the market feel that that's pretty much in the bag, that we're probably talking about, you know, a 3.5% Fed funds target rate and about a 5.5% prime rate. The question is what happens next year. I think that a lot of us, we've been talking about this. Bankers have been kind of tossing around the different thoughts about next year, and there was some concern. You know, if the Fed followed through and had 3 more rate increases next year, and that had been discussed quite a bit, is that with the December increase and 3 more next year, what sort of pressure was that going to put on borrowers? And
right, because you're looking at 4.25%.
Because if prime rate's 5.5%, right, and then there's 3 more rate increases, mm-hmm, prime goes to 6.25%, mm-hmm, and a lot of borrowers borrow at prime plus something.
Right.
And some of the smaller borrowers, especially on SBA loans, these tend to be the smaller, less sophisticated, less well-capitalized borrowers. They're going to borrow at prime plus 2.5%. So you start getting into that range where borrowers are having to pay 8% for their business loans. That's going to put some stress on those borrowers. It's going to put some stress on the economy. I was pleased to hear recently that the Fed is considering whether they really need to do 3 rate increases next year, whether that's going to be necessary, or if they're reaching their neutral rate. So we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. And that's true, because once, you know, I'm a firm believer that small business is really what drives our economy. And if you think about what happened in the Tax Reform Act, small businesses really didn't get a lot of love, mm-hmm, when you had big, major multinational corporations enjoying such a large tax reduction, that could be a real problem. That said, we still are at a historical lows, mm-hmm, in terms of our interest rates. So it's kind of an interesting dilemma that the Fed is in, given that you want them to have tools in their tool belt.
Well, exactly. And at the moment, we're at a good place in that, you know, with prime at 5.25%, and let's say arguably it may go up to 5.5% this month. But, you know, in that range where a lot of customers maybe are borrowing at prime plus 0.5%, prime plus 1%, you know, they're going to be paying, you know, say 6.5%. That's a reasonable rate over the historic, when you look back historically at rates, it's a reasonable rate to be financing your business at. Mortgage rates are still pretty reasonable. I mean, the 10-year treasury is around 3%. You know, you can still borrow money, you know, in the high 3s into the mid 4s on mortgage rates, maybe as much as 5%. Those are still great rates.
Yeah, it's interesting
for mortgage
that,
borrowing.
That flattened yield curve, you know, even though the short-term rate has gone up, it hasn't really translated into the same trajectory for those long-term rates.
I mean, we could be in a good spot if rate increases pause here for a little while.
Well, but what's really interesting, though, is the tax Reform Act, if that's what it was, gave a credible amount of cash to big companies who were using it for buybacks and for higher dividends. And so from the large company standpoint, they don't seem to need borrowing. They're kind of flush with cash. So in the sense, as a lender, I'd rather be in the area where they didn't have that sort of hyper infusion of cash. Mm-hmm. The smaller companies are the ones that need to borrow. The big ones, mm-hmm. are giving the money back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, given the political climate that we're in terms of regulations, do you foresee, as the Dodd-Frank bill has been repealed, which was the act that required certain, requirements for the banking institutions, given the size of American Riviera, do you fall under that? Because I felt like it was really targeted toward the big six.
So technically, Dodd-Frank hasn't been repealed, but there's been certain paring back of maybe certain rules that were going to be promulgated under Dodd-Frank that may never be promulgated now. So some regulations may never take place that were maybe anticipated inside of Dodd-Frank, or maybe certain things inside of Dodd-Frank might be tweaked to be maybe slightly more business friendly. Mm-hmm. There was originally segmentation. So when Dodd-Frank came out, a lot of the banking associations on behalf of the community banks pushed really hard on their local representatives to say, look, community banks are different. Community banks didn't cause the financial crisis. They weren't the same as Wall Street banks. There were different things going on. And so there were carve-outs where the smaller the bank, generally some of those regulations didn't apply. And that was actually very helpful. I used to always tell people, even though there were a lot of burdensome regulations that came out of Dodd-Frank, there were some nice carve-outs for smaller banks that really helped us out. And more recently, there were some tweaks that I think help at least from a record-keeping standpoint, because the compliance burden is pretty large today. And you know this from your industry as well.
Absolutely.
The investment industry and brokerage and wealth management. The compliance burden on banks is massive. And so little tweaks here and there do make a difference. We saw a change with the amount of data that has to be compiled for the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act. That was kind of a big deal.
So it went from a ream of paper to now just three-quarters of a ream.
It went from hundreds and hundreds of fields that had to be collected for each loan that we made to some exemptions for lenders that don't make more than 500 loans a year in the mortgage arena. And so that's very helpful.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when we look at those impacts, does that make American Riviera more competitive in that banking space when you aren't held to or not required to follow all of those same regulations?
Well, I think we appreciate it because we look at it that when we're a small business. As a smaller community bank, we're a small business just like a lot of our customers are. And so there's only so much that we can allocate to compliance and legal and whatnot. So when we get a little bit of a carve out based upon our size, or when a regulation gets tweaked a little bit to apply more to the larger banks as opposed to the smaller banks, it does help us be more competitive, because what we've generally found is that the bigger the organization, the bigger the bank, obviously the more resources they have to hire attorneys, to possibly look at loopholes in certain regulations to get around them, whereas most smaller organizations that don't have those resources comply. And they don't try to work the loopholes because they don't have the time or the resources to exploit the loopholes. So
you're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
It was a goal that I wanted to achieve from the very beginning.
I'm a 40-year-old man that walked in there to get his high school diploma. I wasn't sure if I could do it. It was very hard for me, but the teachers, the counselors, they help you.
One of the teachers was Ms. Araceli. Ms. Araceli, she gave me direction. Every single time I had a question, she'll put down whatever she's doing and she'll come over and she'll sit there with you until you get it.
At age 47, with the help of his teacher, Marco finished his high school diploma.
50% of getting your high school diploma is walking through those doors. The other 50% is doing the work. Getting your high school diploma, it is a life-changing experience. It really is. It catapults you to where you want to go.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hey, at our startup, my team and I move at the speed of tech 24/7. And every single day, it's information overload. It's coming at me from all directions. And you know what? Bottom line, I just need the news that matters. So where do I turn? Local radio and TV. I want to hear from people who live and work in my town. They give me the real story with information I know I can rely on. So where else can I find out what's happening in my community? Weather and traffic, things that affect my family and my business. I want to stay informed by sources I trust. My local radio and TV stations. For the best entertainment, sports, news, traffic, and weather with no agenda and more reliable than other platforms. So if you ask me for the information I want anytime, anywhere, I stay local. Support your local station. Text radio to 52886 today. Furnished by the NAB and this station. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
And we just so happen to have Jeff Devine in studio with us, the CEO and president of American Riviera Bank.
And that thing, by the way, is such a cool thing to brag about, because you go to cash to get some cash and someone says, oh, you bank at that bank? No, I bank at American Riviera. I can use any machine. I get cash even when I don't need it.
I know, that's why I'm laughing, because I can totally see you being in Manhattan visiting your son and just going to get cash just so you can say that.
And then you get the credit that night for the fee that the ATM charged you, right?
Well, that was a thing that is so neat, because you, in the very first few weeks, you didn't. And it was, if you happened to get money the day of the bank statement closing, you were off by $3. Mm. But now they do it simultaneously so you can balance your checkbook.
Yeah.
For those, by the way, most people don't balance. My children haven't balanced their checkbook in years. They say, why do you need to balance it? It's right.
You know what, Neil? I asked people at the bank, I said, how many of you actually balance your checkbook? It's about 50% of bankers.
Wow.
50% don't, 50% do. You would expect that a lot more bankers would balance their checkbook.
It's funny, a friend of mine I was talking to yesterday said, Diane, do you know if there's an app that, you know, balances your checkbook for you? And I'm kind of like, well, if there were an app, it would be automated. And are you really balancing your checkbook then? You'd still have to write it down, whether you type it in your phone or write it down.
Right.
So before the break, we were talking about carve-outs of, you know, regulations that small community banks don't have to necessarily comply with because of the sheer size. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't affect any of the solvency issues, and I just want to make that clear on the air.
No, that
doesn't affect your capital rates or make you any less. Or
if we take it back to a kind of a simple way of looking at it, you know, all banks have to have certain capital ratios. So maybe the easiest way to think about it is capital for a bank is similar to shareholders' equity inside of a corporation. Right? So it's your shareholders' equity at the bank, and you can only have a certain amount. So a bank can only grow its assets to a certain point based upon its capital size. There's a certain amount of leverage that's enabled to be employed. And so ratios apply. So for example, if you are a bank that has, let's say, 100 million of capital, then you can be about a billion in assets. It's about a 10-to-1 ratio. Okay, and then if you're a major global bank, well, then you're going to have billions of dollars of capital and you can grow to be $1 trillion in assets. So those ratios tend to apply no matter what size bank you are. And that also impacts, we were talking a little bit earlier, your capital impacts the amount you're able to loan out. So generally for a bank like us, we're chartered here in the state of California. The rules are that we can loan out about 25% of our capital on real estate secured loans to one relationship, and about 15% of our capital is the maximum we can loan out to any one particular business relationship secured by business type assets. So for us, you know, we've got ballpark, you know, $60 million of capital. And so we've got legal lending limits, you know, that are approaching $15 million for real estate and maybe about, you know, $8 million for business lending. So that's how capital ratios can impact the amount of loans.
And you can do a joint venture. So if somebody comes in and wants to borrow a little bit more than you can,
you could get two banks together, similar minded banks that might be in neighboring counties, and you could say, this is a great customer, let's take care of it. You know, we'll take $10 million of this loan, you take five, and we'll take care of the customer. So we do that all the time.
Interesting. So now when you look at small businesses, because you have those limits, does that make you more choosy on who you're going to lend to? What's their rating level? If we're talking about in the bond world, you know,
I would say that we look at it and say we're lending out our depositors' money, and so it's our obligation to make sure that we keep our loan portfolio safe, and we make sure that we run the bank in a safe and sound manner. And so I think a lot of times people do make jokes about bankers and saying they're always willing to loan money when you don't need it. But when you really need it, the banks, you know, are sometimes very conservative. But I think we have to be. And I like to use an example where a good bank earns about a 1% return on assets. And so what that means is if we have $100 million worth of loans out there, a good bank is going to earn $1 million on that $100 million loan portfolio, right? But if you make a $1 million mistake, you've wiped out your entire profit for the year on that $100 million loan portfolio. So banks have to be right so much of the time. You really can't take a whole lot of losses inside of a bank loan portfolio and still be a performing bank. And so that's why, you know, there's other sources. You know, there are other sources that are more asset-based and less cash flow-based for loans, and there's also equity. So if you're a company that needs money and things are a little bit more risky, maybe you don't get a loan, maybe you bring investors in.
So now with the bank, when you issue a loan, do you keep it on your books or do you repackage and sell?
We do. So that would be maybe a distinction too between smaller community banks and larger banks. Most community banks will keep all of their loans on their portfolio, inside their portfolio, and not sell off any of their loans. One exception to that might be mortgage loans. So oftentimes smaller community banks are brokers for mortgage loans. So we'll originate the loan, but then that loan may end up eventually with Fannie and Freddie and being packaged up into a pool of mortgage loans
for investors.
And, and what is the rationale for keeping loans in your portfolio?
Well, I think, first of all, most community banks, as I said, are spread lenders. So we exist on the spread between what we charge on our loans and what we pay out on our deposits. So the more loans that we're holding on to obviously helps with that spread income. You could sell loans off and just get a fee, but then that's it. You don't earn any spread on it. It's over. It's done. You got a fee for selling the loan. But the distinction there would be, you know, keeping the loans is beneficial. Plus, I think it's a more responsible way of lending if you think about it. If we're making loans that we keep, we're going to make sure those are always good loans. And back in the day when the economy got into difficulty, there were lenders out there that were making loans that they shouldn't have made because they weren't planning on keeping them anyway. And so I see that as being a more responsible way of keeping them in your portfolio.
Yeah, what's interesting about 2008 is that people were creating jokes and memes, although memes weren't around then, you know, about the fact that the person originating the loan knew that this was a bad loan, but they didn't care because it was going to be packaged and sold to some Iceland's
pension
plan.
Yeah, you remember they said ninjas.
Yeah.
No income, no job loans, right?
Right. And, you know, it would you look at that and you say, how could nobody have, how could the upper level executives have not seen that coming?
Were you listening to the beginning of this show? About auto loans? Hello?
Right. Well, that's my point. But the auto loan market is a small subset.
But it's the same concept
It's the same concept.
I mean, when businesses are set up to originate loans, package them up, sell them, and move on, and there's nothing at stake. There's nothing hanging out there.
Well, I think that's the major key is with a community bank, you have a stake in my firm's success because you want us to pay back our loan.
Sure, absolutely.
And that's a huge deal.
And the other advantage of it is that the borrower can talk to you. Once it's securitized, they have no one to speak to. So if a borrower gets into trouble, at least he can talk to you. And if he works it out, then the next time he borrows money, he's going to want to come back to you because he has someone who's there who can make a deal.
That's
and
true.
Understand his business. You know, that's a big component as well.
Do you think after the show we should go borrow some money?
Sure. What are you buying me?
What are you buying?
Yeah, exactly.
Stimulate the economy, right?
Yeah, well,
keep
you
buying
know,
things.
I think it's be good for the economy to borrow money.
More mixed nuts.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hello, I'm Peter Noon, Herman from Herman's Hermits, and something tells me I'm into something good because I'm listening to Around the World, the award-winning travel show on KZSB, AM 1290. It's live every Thursday at 10 a.m. and rebroadcast again at 8 p.m. as well as on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Bloody hell, it's on everywhere all the time, it's even on ATW.TV and on Cox Television. It's bright, it's funny, and wow, I'm into something good on Around the World.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, Jeff, what does the future of American Riviera Bank look like? You know, how do we keep this asset in our community?
Sure. So, you know, for a long time, we thought just about being a Santa Barbara bank only. That this was going to be our community, the county of Santa Barbara was going to be our defined market. And we were kind of heading in that direction for many years. And what ended up happening actually was in our neighboring county of Ventura and in our neighboring county of San Luis Obispo, over the course of about 5 years, all of the community banks left. They were merged out of existence. So they got bought by larger banks or they merged in with larger banks. And so we spent some time looking at whether we should go into Ventura County or San Luis Obispo County. And we made the decision that we wanted to move into San Luis Obispo County, that it felt a lot like Santa Barbara County, and that Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo share a lot of the same professionals, whether it be wealth management professionals, attorneys, CPAs, architects. There's a lot of cross-pollination between San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara, and both markets are somewhat protected in that there's a lot of relationships that are really important and in play in our markets, whereas Ventura is a little closer to Los Angeles. It's maybe a little bit less relationship-minded, or maybe the professionals in Ventura would turn towards Los Angeles for their advice. So we made a decision in the summer of 2017 to open up a loan production office in Paso Robles, which we opened up, and we converted that to a full commercial branch this year in 2018. And so we're about to do the same with San Luis Obispo. We're opening up a loan production office this month in San Luis Obispo, which will be a full branch next year, kind of around mid-year next
That's
year.
Exciting.
So we'll have the two branches up there and the three branches down here. And we're really, really enjoying it. It's been fun.
Have you been at Paso Robles in the summer?
I have.
It's very warm.
We have very good air conditioning in that building. And we also had to put a cover over the ATM to make sure
did you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, and a drive-through because interestingly enough, Paso Robles gets very cold in the winter and very hot in the summer, and so a lot of customers like to use the drive-through. So they never have to get out of their cars.
Right. Well, or maybe if they have small kids.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
With car seats. So now do you envision one day there being an American Riviera Bank in another county?
I kind of see a nice spread between, you know, Paso Robles. One might have said, why'd you go to Paso Robles first? Because that's at the far end of San Luis Obispo County. But for us, it was all about people. There was a really good team of bankers that we wanted to hire that were available in Paso Robles. And so we decided to start there first. And now it's been a little bit of backfilling back. So we'll open up San Luis Obispo. And I could see a future where we really connect the two markets. That could mean something in five cities. Mm-hmm. Kind of the whole Arroyo Grande, Pismo Beach area. It could also mean something in the Santa Maria, San Ynez Valley at some point, but it'd be really nice to have a spread from Paso Robles all the way through to Montecito and focus on these two counties.
You know, I think you said something that really is one of the distinguishing qualities about American Riviera Bank is it's the people first. And I think that that comes through with all of your branches. And so you walk in as we started the show and you feel like they know who you are, regardless of whether they're your relationship manager or not. And I think if you start with people, you know, what it all boils down to is people and people, you know,
yeah.
regardless of social media.
I appreciate that you say that. I just think that anyone in general, no matter where you do your banking, whether it's an American Riviera Bank or whether it's another bank, is, you know, make sure you are getting some personal attention. I mean, make sure that if you do have a problem, make sure someone is paying attention to you, that you're not just ending up in a 1-800 number maze, you know, that there really is someone taking care of you because, you know, you deserve that, you know. Every business and every person deserves to have a personal banking relationship.
And just another compliment, when I pay a vendor by check, and they go to the bank, they're treated really well. And in other banks, that was not the case. You know, someone comes in work clothes with a check,
it's interesting. We heard reports that there's banks out there that aren't even cashing checks for
on their own institution. Yeah. Right.
I mean, drawn on their own institution. So it would be as if, you know, we had a customer that ran a business and then they were paying one of their employees and their employee couldn't come into our office to cash a check. That just makes no sense to us.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited.
And thank you for all that you do in our community.
Oh, thank you.
I'm so excited. I'm going to go to the branch now and cash a check.
Sounds like a great way to finish your afternoon, Neil.
Well, thanks for being here. Thanks for sponsoring the show. You've been listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you next week.